to them at a time, and it's very, very quickly done. We could do, we could screen a child in about 15 seconds. So if we have them coming in, so most of the time that we spend is doing the paperwork, because those children that we screen, they have to be tracked by the school, and they have to let the parents know if the child passed the vision exam, so they could be referred. Again, one of the things that Lions do, not only do we tell them they need to be referred, but we also go a step further by giving them a free follow-up evaluation at a clinic, at a Visions clinic, via the College of Optometry that our club does, my Lions club does that, or to a private practitioner in the area that the Lions club would pick up the cost. So again, the idea is not to just tell a parent that, hey, your child didn't pass a vision exam, but also to tell them what the next step is, because that's very important. How do they move forward and get the child seen and provide them with a pair of glasses if that's what they need? And, you know, so again, that's part of providing a full service as far as screenings are concerned.
On that note, Dr. Freddy Perez, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Politics or Pedagogy.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
This is John Crumshaw with a special Politics or Pedagogy Education Report.
90.7 FM, KPFK, Los Angeles.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Negwa Ibrahim. Before we begin our show, I just wanted to let all of the listeners know that support for Middle East in Focus comes in part from Live Nation, which is presenting Malala Yousafzai in conversation with Kristen Bell on Thursday, November 13th at 8 p.m. live at the Wilshire Ebell Theater. And in appreciation for all of you, the listeners, we are actually offering 5 pairs for free for anyone who would like to go to the show. If you're interested in getting a pair, you can call 818-985-5735 and hit option 1. And that, again, is to get a free pair of tickets to the Malala Yousafzai In Conversation with Kristen Bell event on Thursday, November 13th at 8 p.m. live at the Wilshire Ebell Theater. So now, for our show today. Today we're going to talk about the situation in Sudan. Calls are growing for the U.S. to end arms transfers to the United Arab Emirates after reports of horrific slaughter in Sudan by the UAE-backed Rapid Support Forces. The paramilitary force, RSF, has recently took control of El Fasher, which was the Sudan Armed Forces' last major outpost in Darfur. The forces stormed the city, displacing tens of thousands and killing an estimated 2,000 people in door-to-door killings, executions, and a massacre at the Saudi maternity hospital. The slaughter of civilians comes on the backdrop of what is already the world's largest humanitarian catastrophe in Sudan, where the UAE-backed violence in Sudan has displaced 13 million people and killed tens of thousands. RSF's takeover of El Fasher and scenes of mass slaughter have renewed calls for the U.S. to end its armed transfers to the UAE. Senator Chris Van Hollen of Maryland stated, quote, "As we witness horrific scenes in El Fasher, the UAE continues arming the RSF, which the U.S. has determined is committing genocide. Enough. We must pass my bill to block arms sales to the UAE until it stops fueling the RSF's war crimes in Sudan," end quote. Senator Chris Van Hollen of Maryland, a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, introduced legislation in March alongside Representative Sarah Jacobs of California that would prohibit the sale of certain weapons until the president certifies that the country is no longer supplying the RSF. This followed a briefing from the Biden administration that confirmed the UAE's transfers to the paramilitary force. The war's civilian casualties have been immense, and the U.S. declared a genocide in Sudan earlier this year, naming RSF and allied forces as the main perpetrators. Additionally, the U.N. Security Council has renewed its sanctions regime and arms embargo on Sudan. Analysts say that the war would be over if not for the UAE supplying weapons. Now, despite this, the U.S. continues to maintain a flow of weapons to the UAE, which is, as we've said, a major supplier for RSF. Last year, the Biden administration advanced a $1.2 billion weapons sale to the UAE, despite the evidence that the country was not making good on its pledge to not provide weapons to the RSF. Then in May of this year, the Trump administration notified Congress of a $1.4 billion sale of weapons and military equipment to the UAE ahead of a visit to the UAE and Saudi Arabia by President Donald Trump. So with us today to talk about the current situation in Sudan, the UAE-sponsored massacres in Sudan, and the U.S. flow of weapons to the UAE that are being used in Sudan is our guest, Saad Abdulaziz, a Sudanese-American lawyer and founder of human rights advocacy organization Decolonize Sudan. At Decolonize Sudan, Saad documents abuses, files human rights complaints on behalf of victims, creates educational materials, and leads advocacy trainings throughout the U.S. Saad works to support human rights defenders in the Global South, advising on issues surrounding surveillance, mass incarceration, and corporate obligations under international human rights law. Welcome, Saad Abdulaziz, back to Middle East in Focus. We are so happy you can join us again.
Greetings, Negwa. Thank you so much for having me back on. Honored to be on.
So there is a lot to talk about, and we are very grateful for your expertise to really shed light on what is happening and the UAE's complicity in the genocide, as well as the United States' complicity. So first, I want to start with this question. The situation in Sudan has been described as a civil war beginning on April 15, 2023, between the Sudanese armed forces and the Rapid Support Forces. Now, my question is this. Is that how you would describe it, as a civil war, considering the UAE's role and the United States? And I know I mentioned it in the beginning, but can you explain and elaborate on what has been the UAE's role in what is happening in Sudan, as well as the role of the United States?
What's happening in Sudan is not a civil war. And this is what Sudanese people and advocates and civil society have been screaming to the world for 2.5 years now. Since April of 2023, when the RSF siege began. It is a genocide and it is an occupation. It is the deliberate destruction of our people, and it is orchestrated by the United Arab Emirates. The RSF militia is a militia whose operations that has essentially taken siege of much of Sudan and destabilized the entirety of the region. This militia, their operations would not be possible without the United Arab Emirates. We now know via UN experts, via US intelligence, and via RSF commanders themselves that this is a deliberate project orchestrated by the UAE to erase our people, to steal our land and our resources, to destroy and destabilize our country, a country that dared to demand freedom and demand basic representation within our 2019 revolution. So it's really important to understand the actors here. The RSF is a militia made up of mostly mercenary fighters that are hired in by the United Arab Emirates. And this militia, within the past week and a half, has committed one of the most extensive mass killing events of the 21st century. But I want to just back up to, before talking about what the RSF has done within the past week and a half, to talk about how the RSF laid out their plan to do this over a year ago. And UN officials warned of this back in June. The RSF stated that they would take over the west of Sudan, and in order to do so, they would seize the capital of North Darfur, El Fasher, the most populated city in North Darfur, and which is a region located in Sudan's the west of Sudan. And they stated that to do this, they wouldn't eliminate every civilian they found in El Fasher. And this, of course, caused the majority of El Fasher's over 1 million civilians to flee El Fasher. But over a quarter of a million remained within El Fasher. And so Sudanese people, UN experts, have been screaming for over a year now about what the RSF would do in El Fasher, their annihilation campaign that that the RSF themselves stated that they would inflict upon the Sudanese people of El Fasher. And within a five-day span, reports by Yale Humanitarian Research Lab indicate that the entirety of the quarter of a million civilian population may have been wiped out. These are numbers that defy comprehension. The entire city, which for a year was a trapped, besieged civilian population that the RSF prevented from getting any food in and prevented any civilians from getting out, the RSF within the past week began to annihilate this population. And they exterminated the people of El Fasher like they stated they would 1 year ago. So with impunity, the RSF went on to starve the city leading up to committing this extermination. And then within this five-day period, the RSF went in, exterminated all of the patients within the major hospitals, including a maternity hospital housing mothers and their children. They went door to door and killed all families, eliminating an entire neighborhood within a matter of a day in one of the most populated neighborhoods in El Fasher. They committed unspeakable crimes of torture and abuse. The trenches that the RSF dug up to imprison this civilian population and prevent food from coming in, the RSF began using them as mass grave sites for all of these civilians that they exterminated. And within the past 2 days, the Yale Humanitarian Research Lab has reported that the RSF is burning all of the bodies in the trenches. The RSF now illegally occupies the land belonging to those whom they have massacred and displaced. And this militia will not stop until they have done this to every inch of Sudan. This is what the militia spokespeople and fighters are actively stating. So what Sudan is currently facing is total annihilation. And this is at the hands of the RSF militia, and their and most importantly, would not be possible without their UAE benefactors, because the UAE is not only the chief arms provider to the RSF militia, but it also acts as the operational hub of the RSF. So like I said earlier, the RSF is made up of mostly mercenary forces, and the UAE is able to coordinate mercenary forces from neighboring countries and from other countries like Colombia. Recruits these fighters, brings them in, funds the fighters, funds all of the operations, weapons, and tech that the RSF is currently utilizing to slaughter the people of Sudan.
So I have so many follow-up questions. So thank you so much for laying all of that out. And it is why I wanted to start with dismantling this notion that what is happening in Sudan is a civil war. And as you state, it is in fact a genocide and an occupation. So I want to unpack that a little bit more. So genocide, the legal definition of genocide is the intentional destruction of a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group in whole or in part. So what you are essentially saying then, and please correct me if I'm recapping this incorrectly, is that essentially, the RSF is working on intentionally destroying, in whole or in part, the Sudanese people in general at the direction of the UAE?
Yes, that's right. That's right, Negwa.
Okay. And then, so this then, the next question is, who, you sort of started getting into it, who actually makes up the RSF? I mean, you know, because it's been, it's being labeled as a civil war, so people think who is actually a part of the RSF are those who are Sudanese themselves. Can you explain who actually is making, who is the, who's making up the RSF?
Yeah, so the RSF was started by Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo. He's also known as Hamed T. And Hamed T had his starts, he's from a Bedouin kind of traveler tribe that originates in Chad. And he came to Sudan and acted as kind of this militia fighter pretty early on within this previous militia alliance called the Janjaweed, and worked his way up within that alliance. In 2014, Hamed T created his own private militia force called the Rapid Support Forces, and he began to deploy this private militia force. He was contracted by countries all over the Middle East and North Africa within especially violent suppression campaigns. This was a mercenary for hire group, and was hired by the former war criminal Libyan commander Haftar to massacre Libyan civilians, was hired by previously by the United Arab Emirates to go into Yemen and massacre civilians there, and was hired by the European Union to act as mercenary border patrol to prevent migrants attempting to make their way from Libya to Italy, which is a common pathway for migrants from Africa to Europe. And so this was kind of the start of the RSF as this business enterprise that deals in war crimes, in war crimes that the contracting entities themselves, you know, couldn't conduct themselves because they're perhaps a part of a larger state that has its own obligations under international law or domestic law. So are using this militia to conduct that work that they themselves are obliged that they would not be able to do. And so the RSF had its starts this way. In 2023 onward, the RSF recruited most of its fighters as mercenaries from neighboring countries. And the UAE was vital in that recruitment and fighter base. It built supply networks through Chad, Libya, South Sudan, Uganda, and other neighboring countries to funnel in arms, funnel in fuel, and funnel in fighters. That would then be recruited into the RSF's ranks. There's also ample evidence out there around the Colombian mercenaries. The UAE directly hired, hundreds, maybe thousands of Colombian mercenaries to into the RSF's ranks. The UAE's goals here are very clear in controlling Sudanese resources. One of the primary resources being gold, because the United Arab Emirates is the main exporter of gold, but does not have a single gold mine. And so needs the theft of Sudanese gold in order to maintain its economy. The United Arab Emirates is also a desert and so has always relied on Sudan's agricultural resources and fertile land in order to have agricultural imports. And so is now engaging in mass smuggling of these resources. The UAE is also interested in the Red Sea, the strategic reach and shaping of Sudan's Red Sea access. So all of these factors together, the UAE also, has been on a two-decade-long kind of campaign now to try to control all of the main ports along the Red Sea. So Sudan's Red Sea port is really essential in that campaign. All of these factors are, clearly outline what the kind of what the UAE's role are and their motivation are. And I think what's a little less obvious is the United States' role in this.
Let me just very quickly before we get into that, I just want to remind everyone that we are talking about the current situation in Sudan, the UAE-sponsored massacres in Sudan, and the U.S. flow of weapons to the UAE that are being used in Sudan with our guest, Saad Abdulaziz, Sudanese-American lawyer and founder of human rights advocacy organization Decolonize Sudan. And just really quick, Saad, before we get into the United States, I'm just going to recap because I think, it's so important what you're saying to really shed light on the truth of what is happening. So just to recap then, essentially, what we've just heard is that the rapid support forces are engaged in the genocide of the Sudanese people, that is the intentional destruction of the Sudanese people in whole or in part, at the direction of the UAE. So essentially, the UAE is engaged in committing a genocide against the Sudanese people using RSF forces. And why? So that the UAE can control Sudanese gold, so the resources of gold in Sudan. So the UAE can exploit the agricultural resources of Sudan, and so that the UAE can have control of one of the main ports of the Red Sea that is located in Sudan. So is that correct? Is that a fair recap?
Yeah, thank you so much for summarizing that, Nagwa. That's very, very fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so now we sort of understand the UAE's role, and again, it's not just that they are supporting genocide; they are actually the ones directing the genocide, utilizing the RSF, who is committing the genocide on the ground along with the UAE. And now let's bring in, as you're about to do, the United States. Can you talk about what the Trump administration's interest is in unconditionally supporting the UAE? And what is Trump's personal interest in not pressuring the UAE to end its genocide in Sudan?
Yeah, thank you so much. I want to start with that it didn't begin with Trump, that the United States is the main weapons provider to the United Arab Emirates and the main defense partner of the United Arab Emirates. So the weapons that are being manufactured, the weapons going into the UAE are being manufactured by the US, and in fact our taxpayer dollars go towards the manufacturing and export of these weapons exports, and this is important because these weapons go on to get to the RSF and of course slaughter the people of Sudan. And so this is an indirect weapons pipeline that the US not only continues to arm the UAE, but within since the RSF siege began in April of 2023, the US has only increased arms to the UAE by billions of dollars. Trump, of course, was a key to this large increase within his recent deals with the UAE, including defense deals. So the U.S. Not only continues and expands its arming of the UAE, the entity orchestrating Sudan's destruction, but it also, within the past 2 weeks, during this annihilation campaign in Al-Fashid, during the RSF's annihilation campaign, the U.S. hosted RSF leaders, including the number two in command of the RSF, Algoni Dagalo, who was himself sanctioned by the U.S. for genocide. And he continues to walk freely on U.S. soil and be hosted by the U.S. in D.C. while the people of Sudan are exterminated by his forces. This is also the brother of Hemeti, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo. So the U.S. is not only complicit in providing continuing to provide arms that it knows are going into Sudan, but also providing diplomatic legitimacy to this barbaric mercenary militia force in the midst of their active campaign of genocide and annihilation of the Sudanese people, and in particular within this past 2 weeks, the people of Al-Fashir and North Darfur. We have to understand that our tax dollars here within the U.S. are going towards weapons to the UAE. The U.S.'s arms, you know, are manufacturing these arms, and U.S. Corporations are actively profiting from this slaughter. So as a human rights lawyer, I want to make clear that continuing to send weapons to the United Arab Emirates while it arms the RSF militia is not just immoral, it's not just wrong, it is illegal under international law and under domestic U.S. law. Under the Arms Trade Treaty, to which the United States is a signatory, states have a legal obligation to halt arms exports if there is a clear risk that those weapons will be used to commit war crimes, genocide, and crimes against humanity, to which U.S. Policymakers, leaders, and intelligence have themselves stated that these weapons are being used for these violations in Sudan. Domestic Leahy laws also prohibit military aid to human rights violators. So we must stop asking and demand of our leaders no more empty condemnations. Stop the flow of arms that are fueling the genocide of our people. And many Congress people have stood up and are standing up to Trump's administration and the State Department to do so, to prohibit the flow of arms.
So because we're running out of time, and mm-hmm. There's a few things I want you to get into before we end. I just really quick want to remind all the listeners to show our appreciation for all of you. We are offering 5 pairs of tickets for the Live Nation event with Malala Yousafzai in conversation with Kristen Bell on Thursday, November 13th at 8 p.m. live at the Wilshire Ebell Theater. And that is in part because Middle East in Focus is supported by Live Nation. And make sure you call 818-985-5735, hit option 1 if you'd like a pair of free tickets. This is to show our appreciation and gratitude to all of you, the listeners. You make it possible for us to even have conversations like these, like the one we're having with Saad, which is so important and so necessary. Really quick, Saad, we're going to end on this last question because it was such an important point you brought up in your op-ed, that in addition to the U.S. Not doing enough to rein in the UAE to stop the genocide, as you've laid out, there are also companies like the NBA and Disney who actually should be doing something to leverage their ability to stop the UAE from the genocide it's committing in Sudan. Can you talk about that and why it's so important to stop this genocide for the future of Sudan and for the world?
That's right, because at the end of the day, the United Arab Emirates relies on its image, this global image that it has portrayed, and in order for that image to continue, these deals with larger corporations must continue. And one thing that we have, power that we have as consumers is the power to boycott UAE tourism and gold, and also to urge corporations that also are concerned about their image to call upon them, entities like the NBA, to end their partnerships with the UAE. Refugees International is currently hosting a campaign in which we're coalition partners of to directly demand that the NBA end these partnerships, particularly in light of the latest RSF atrocities that UAE weapons have enabled in Al-Fashir. And if you're in the U.S., It only takes 1 minute to urge your representatives to support the UAE arms embargo that was brought by Representative Sarah Jacobs and Senator Chris Van Hollen. It's the Stand Up for Sudan Act. And the link is bit.ly/sanctionRSF. And that automates a message to your representatives explaining the legislation and the importance of why they need to support a immediate halting of the arms going into the UAE that end up slaughtering Sudanese people.
And Disney?
That's right, yes.
And what's Disney's relationship?